Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining the show this weekend. Got a little bit of a curveball thrown at us before we walked into the studio. We've got a guest host today, EJ. What's your last name?
Pionson.
I'm not going to touch that one. Okay. So I've known EJ for a while. He used to be the shop manager at Wasting Arrows, right?
Yes. We've been there for 8 years with that company. It's been a great run with them. And so now I'm working on starting my own school here in town.
Okay, yeah, let's get into that. But before we do, back up real quick. How'd you get started in archery?
So how I got started in archery is, you know, my wife didn't want me to have a gun in the house. So one day I decided to go out and bought myself a compound bow. And I started shooting and just kind of fell in love with it. That's how it kind of all developed. Getting into the business side of it, you know, I thought it would be a great side job to do, but I didn't have very much experience. So I ended up getting some education through the PSE Shooter School in Tucson, Arizona. And then I went through their course. And after that, I was hired on at Wasting Arrows.
Talk about that course real quick, because Dave and I have talked about going to one of them. They're not super expensive. You just got to travel and get there.
Yeah.
Break it down. What do they do?
So when you go there, you can take, it's a 3-day course. It's a shooter, technician, and instructor course. So each day they're going to work on one of the aspects of those courses. And then you kind of just work on bows, shooting, and learning how to instruct other archers on shooting.
Okay, but it's not strictly for PSE. Like, you could show up with a bow tech.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you could show up with any bow you want. It's not necessarily you have to be shooting a PSE to go there. It's just in a more of an educational school of shooting.
You would say, yay, it's worth it.
100%. Oh, definitely. It was a great experience and just fun, you know, and you get to see some different people around the country. My class was, you know, a bunch of guys from the East Coast, which, you know, was really cool experience talking to them about their shops and how they hunt out there and their different tournaments they do that we don't do here in the West. So it's a good, fun course to take.
What's the big, I'm drawing a blank, but what's the big tournament, the 3D thing they do back east?
I think that's ASA.
ASA. Probably mutual friend of ours, Timmy. Yeah, he's big into that ASA thing. And he was saying it's, comparatively speaking, it's a sold out, tons of people participate. Like, everybody that bow hunts does ASA stuff back east versus out west, where it's kind of, there's more guys like me where it's like, yeah, I've been hunting forever, but I don't want to go shoot targets.
Right. Yeah, I guess ASA is, it simulates a lot of like more hunting scenarios than you'll see out here in the West that we do, like our 3D shoots. So
you go to the PSE Shooter School, fast forward, you decide, hey, I'm going to make a career out of this. You land at Wasting Arrows. That closes down. Now talk to me about what your, this PATS.
Yeah, so I founded PATS, which is Precision Archery Training School. After Wasting Arrows closed down, I still wanted to continue coaching and kind of still do archery. And so I met up with a friend who runs Nevada Firearms Archery. And so he was starting an archery range, and I needed a building to run my program at. And so, you know, kind of talking to him, we got together, and he's helping me start my program there. As far as, you know, we've been going, I've been doing pretty good so far, and I'm hoping to expand it as we go.
Okay, so you are the, it's the second floor of Nevada Firearms Academy on, I called it technology earlier. It's not technology.
No, we're off of Double R.
Double R. Okay. So it's the upstairs there. I actually went over there one day. You weren't there. Yeah, I mean, good setup. I'm glad that it's coming back, especially as a parent to two kids who are actively involved in archery. I'm glad you're doing that again. You said you're offering JOAD. Explain that a little bit for people that don't know what JOAD is.
So JOAD, I run the USA Archery Sanction class here in town. So JOAD stands for Junior Olympic Archery Development. Kids start at 8 years old all the way to 18. And then I have an adult archery program, which is for 18 and older. We do classes Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Beginner classes, if you're interested with your kids, would be on Thursdays starting at 4 p.m. And they have the adult class right after at 5:15 to 6:15. My intermediate classes are Tuesday, Wednesdays at 4 to 5, and then advance 5:15 to 6:15 on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Okay, so when you say stuff like beginner, intermediate, advanced, for especially that male demographic, people like me, I tend to think of myself as advanced at everything.
Sure.
And then you put a Vegas 3 spot up there and you're like, man, I'm not very good. So those breakdowns that you went through, beginner, intermediate, advanced, there are actual like metrics for each level, right?
Yeah. So as you start the program, for especially for the kids, they would start in the beginner course. They're going to learn basic fundamentals. And then we have a scoring day where it tests their development based on a target on with points. And to move up to the next level, you're going to have to be able to shoot a certain score to eventually get to the intermediate class and same to get to the advanced. But it shows us as coaches where you're developing and how you are scoring.
And I remember for my girls, as silly as it sounds, you get a piece of flair, you get a pin if you move up, you get a little lanyard and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was like the motivation, at least for Madeline, for my older daughter. Every time, every scoring week or whatever it was, every scoring class that she used to go to, it was, oh man, I hope I get a pin. So there is that weird, as I look at it and I'm like, I don't need a piece of flair. But for kids, it certainly keeps them engaged and keeps them going. Once they get to that intermediate level, that's when it's more like they own their own equipment. They're bringing in their own stuff, correct?
Yeah, I start kind of discussing that with the parents about having their own equipment to help them start getting to the next level. When you're in the beginner class, you're using a very basic bare bow, meaning there's no sights on there and, you know, any stabilizers to kind of assist you in shooting. So it's very, just very raw and bare. And they're just working on learning just fundamentals on shooting. And then by the time they get to the intermediate, is then we start taking their equipment and their skill set to the next level of accuracy and consistency.
What distance are they shooting at each level?
So in beginners, you're going to start at 10 yards. Once you graduate from the beginner class, you're going to move up to the 20 yards.
And you guys have the Nevada Firearms Academy, the upstairs, or what'd you call it? Nevada...
So my business, Pat's, is just a school at their range. So
okay.
I'm not really affiliated with them. You know, it's a separate program to what they're going to be also offering with their archery range.
Okay, when I stopped by there, it looked like it definitely goes out to 20, but it looks like it goes farther than 20 yards.
We can reach out. I think I ranged it up to 24 yards.
Okay.
We can kind of push the targets back, but we don't, you know, necessarily
Why?
Have a lot of room in the very backpack. So,
well, and that's the thing I would bring up to people listening too. You know, you don't need a ton of space for this sort of thing. I'm not going to encourage people to shoot. Like, look, if you live in one of those subdivisions with a postage stamp size backyard, don't have your kids out there flinging arrows at the neighbor's pets.
Yeah, sure.
But I mean, realistically, you go slightly outside of town, you only need 20 yards to do this stuff. You don't need a ton of space to do it. I know I'm fortunate enough. I have a backyard where my kids can shoot. You don't need a ton of space to do it. So if your kid wants to practice at home or whatever, holy smokes, you could go down to Bauer's Mansion area and shoot and you're fine.
I tell a lot of my kids, if you're shooting at home or at any range, especially when you're working on fundamentals, is to shoot really close. Do 5 yards, 10 yards. I think you can get really good training by doing something like that instead of trying to fling something 20 yards and always worrying about if you're hitting the target. I think what you do on the shooting line, way more important to be consistent, and then your arrows will find the target. It's not as fun, I guess,
nope.
You know, but it's a very good training by shooting really close and learning the right fundamentals of shooting.
You guys worked on me for a long time to, what'd you call it, walk back?
Yeah.
When I was struggling with the Vegas shoot thing, I never did it because it's just more fun to shoot. Like, why do I want to shoot at 5 yards when I could go shoot at 50? This is way more fun. Let's take a quick break right there. As always, thank you to Legacy Sports International for sponsoring the show today. Home of the Howa Superlight, 4.7 pounds, super accurate. We will be back in just a second with part two.
All
right, thanks for hanging in there over the break. We are back, and like I said the first segment, Dave's got a friend right now that apparently is stuck out in the middle of nowhere. So EJ Tjongson.
Tjongson.
Oh, man, I'm getting so there. Close. Yes, co-hosting today. We're talking a little bit about the archery school that you started here recently. And then over the break, we were discussing kind of EJ's unconventional, or maybe not unconventional, but different path in archery. I tend to think more people are like me. My wife would probably say that's the ego. I think most people bow hunt first. And then if they like archery, they get into target stuff.
Yeah.
You kind of went about it the opposite.
For me, when I started shooting a bow, I, like everyone else, you know, you probably would buy a hunting bow to start, but I enjoyed just shooting at targets, getting into it. And then I did my first league night and started seeing all these guys coming in with these target bows. And I just, you know, thought they looked ridiculous to me with the long stabilizers and their shoot through risers and stuff. But watching them, you know, pinpoint shots was pretty amazing, you know. And for me, I've always been a competitor all my life. I did a lot of sports. So the competitive side of me said, you know, I want to beat these guys because they're smoking me right now. And as I really got into it and shooting these leagues, you know, I got my first target bow and I saw quite a difference in my scoring now, you know, and that kind of led me to always want to get better every week. And so, you know, that was just kind of the opening for me, opened the door for me to start shooting a target bow. And, you know, being accurate with a target bow kind of got me, hey, I could probably do this hunting. That started that little tick in my head, like, hey, let's start hunting with a bow now. So
I would make the argument that your way probably is better. Because I think if you come at it, at least for me, you come at it from a bow hunting perspective, and you're like, of course I hit what I'm aiming at. I've killed a bunch of stuff with a bow.
Yeah.
Like, of course, this is easy. And it's not until you hang that target. And for people that don't know, what we're talking about with this indoor target archery stuff is basically, is a dime too small?
Yeah, we're probably trying to hit something like a penny, I would say.
A penny.
You know, about the size of a penny.
Trying to hit a penny consistently at 20 yards, which again, when you've bow hunted for years and you think, oh yeah, man, I've killed deer out to 57 yards. Of course I could, 20 yards.
Your target's the size of a plate. You know?
You don't think about it because you're like, well, I kill stuff. Oh, okay. I'm a good shot. Man, when you hang that target and you're trying to hit that penny at 20 yards, all of a sudden you realize, yeah, maybe I could do it once.
Yeah, you think it'd be as easy at 20 yards? No, it's hard to be that consistent.
So you coming at it with that, your notion or your standard of accuracy being that versus hubcap on a deer?
I think it gave me a lot more confidence to take shots.
Yeah, I would say,
be able to shoot at a longer distance, but you know, it's when you're looking at an animal and you don't have a little dot to look at,
okay.
You know, you're kind of just looking at the body now, but you know, it just knows like, hey, I make a good shot here.
Yeah.
Hit that area. You know, it's just, you're trying to aim for areas versus kind of like hitting a particular spot, you know, on a paper target.
That's one version of indoor target archery. Back when I used to go beat you up with questions all the time at Wasting Arrows, you've hung other targets for me. I'm just kind of used to the like the adult archery tower thing, and then there's the three, like the Vegas style target.
Yeah.
But there's like five spot things.
Yeah, so there's like different organizations out there, which is like USA Archery or NFAA, which is a different organization. They have a different style target to shoot at, which is, you know, a blue face. They have a single spot, a five spot. There's different, like DARE would be very similar to what you'll see in the ASA style shoots.
All these
targets have different scorings. It's like just playing different games pretty much at the end of the day.
But they're all 20 yards.
Yes. Most of the indoor stuff, you're always going to shoot 20 yards. There's some different ones where you can play like field games where you can change to different yardages and stuff like that.
Okay.
Again, every style target, there's a different kind of way of shooting it, I guess, in a way of distances and stuff like that. Certain organizations only allow a certain diameter arrow, which is how wide or how big the shaft is on the arrow. So for scoring sakes, you know, they keep it very minimal to based on what the style target you're shooting at. So USA Archery, they allow you to shoot a shaft as big as a 23 diameter shaft, where NFAA, they'll allow you a 27. So definitely a 27 is larger than a 23.
Yeah.
And when you see these shafts, you're like, what are you shooting, man?
Yeah. For people listening, if you were like me getting into it, think of like a Bic pen for like kind of a standard hunting arrow diameter. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now think about like a Sharpie or something for like a 23. 27s are even bigger. First time I saw them, I thought this is ridiculous. Like, what in the world is this? But in that world of just pinpoint accuracy, it's that larger diameter shaft. If you're touching a line, you get the points.
Yeah, you get to score the higher value if you hit your target and you're touching a scoring line, you score the higher value.
Right.
So bigger the shaft, bigger the hole in target.
The more likely you are to get the higher points. So I'm a convert because I think I shot those first couple nights of league I did. I think I was shooting a hunting bow with like my standard 5 mil Eastons or something. And I realized pretty quick, man, there's not a lot of margin for error on these.
With small arrows, you can't miss. It's like you have to be a little more dead on in your shot. Here.
I've converted. Now I've got the big suckers and my scores definitely went up. With Pats, I mean, obviously we've kind of emphasized the indoor archery thing.
Sure.
But I know a lot of your shooters. I know a lot of the people you coach. And there's some strong outdoor shooters as well.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming you're going to work that in come 3D
season?
Yeah.
So as I get into, again, we're kind of wrapped up outdoor season right now. There's only maybe a few tournaments left. And then we're transitioning to indoor season. As we get further into transitioning back to outdoor season, we'll be taking the school out to some of the local outdoor courses here in town, Lemon Valley with the Silver Arrow Bowman Club. They got a great outdoor range out there. If you've never been there, great guys on that staff and their board that do a lot of cool leagues and tournaments out there. So if you've never done any outdoor 3D, definitely go check them out. It's good stuff to learn, but I will be getting my students ready for any tournaments outdoor, getting them set up with the proper equipment, arrows, getting their sights and marks ready for outdoor 3D season. If you never did 3D, think of like golf, but archery.
Yeah, it's a good analogy.
You know, you go to different targets, they're going to be at different ranges. So you want to make sure that your sights are set up to hit each distance on each target.
Yeah, when you refer to marks, you're talking about those little lines basically on an archery, I call it scope and people don't know what I'm talking about, but on an archery sight on a target bow.
So you'll have like a scale, like a sight scale.
Right.
Based on the style sight that you have on your bow, there's going to be a lot of bow hunters out there that we call fixed pins, where they shoot a series of pins that are distance from each other for certain distances.
With these precision target things, it was a learning curve for me, but I realized, man, the difference between 3-4 clicks on that thing was it could be a miss at 63 yards or whatever. So that's what you're referring to when you say get your marks.
Yeah, so once you get your marks set up and your sight tape kind of dialed in, you can be able to shoot from like 5 yards to 100 yards.
Yes.
Without, you know, having to really worry about if you're going to miss the target or not. So,
hey, I've seen, I'll call them your kids, but the kids that you have trained since a young age, I shot with a bunch of them at Reading. I know what I don't know. So for my kids, I was like, I want somebody that really knows what they're doing. Talk me through a day one brand new archer, what you try to stress to them.
So when you have a kid or any new archer just wanting to learn to shoot a bow, we break it down by showing them a series of steps to work on. We use NTS, which is the National Training System, which USA Archery uses as a developmental, like part of their developmental program here. So you're going to learn how to properly just kind of stand, hold the bow. We call anchoring, which is you're going to find a spot on the face to place your fingers or a touch point where you can find it consistently, which will help you into aiming and then releasing the string, you know, all the way through the shot. So basic shooting is pretty much learning how to execute a shot. We're trying to find a consistency every time. It's like developing a golf swing. Archery is a repetitive sport. You know, we have to do something repeatedly the same way every time to be accurate. What you're going to learn roughly in a basic class is learning to make a shot consistently.
I would encourage people listening, if you've got a son or daughter, get in touch with EJ. Coming up after the break, we'll talk a little more about the school itself. Then we'll maybe talk a little bit about hunting, dream hunts. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Now, if you've been sitting at home listening to us and you've decided to go out and take the plunge, you're buying all sorts of archery equipment, go see my guy Irvin, Out West Buildings in Fallon. I mean, everything from man cave options, a she shed, trophy room, you name it, he's got it, and at the best prices. So stock up on archery stuff and then go see Irvin. EJ filling in for Danger Dave Catalano. Where we left off there, EJ, we started going into some of the benefits for kids when it comes to this archery stuff. Talked through some of the basics that they get at the beginner level. Now let's jump to like the intermediate. What do you look for when you're looking for that next step in fundamentals, form? What do you see most kids or adults, myself included, starting to mess up?
So usually when you start into the intermediate side, we start shooting at a more of a, you know, we go from 10 to 20 yards now. Now your consistency and your fundamentals are going to be have to be more consistent at that range when you're trying to fling an arrow without any sights or any stabilizer assistance.
Still no sights at the intermediate?
Yeah, still no sights. I usually get them going a month without it still.
Okay.
And then slowly transition, because there's still problems still going on that we have to work on. We still want to clean that up. Then eventually transition them over. Now, not necessarily you have to be a great shooter now at 20 yards. But if I start seeing more of a consistency on their form, then putting in them into a bow with having sights and using a trigger release for the first time instead of using their fingers, the transition is a little more seamless. Some kids are developed faster than others. Some take a little longer. It's kind of one of those things that's, hey, how much do you practice? You don't become Robin Hood just coming once a week, you know, for class. You got to kind of shoot outside of that. Now, some, you know, people don't have their own equipment, but you can still come to the range and call open range, where you can come and rent a bow and your lanes and stuff and practice as you go.
Yeah, shoot outside of class.
Yeah, just shoot outside of class. You know, that's how you get better. If it depends how serious, I guess, you really want to get into it. If it's more of a recreation thing for fun, get out of the house and do something, come once a week. But if I always say, if you are getting into more of a competition side, you want to compete, you just want to do it just more than recreation, you got to practice, whether it's at the range, if you have your own setup at home, practicing makes perfect. You know, you don't need a full on range to practice at home. We talked about shooting five yards, 10 yards. You can benefit a lot by shooting those distances and working on making a repeated shot.
And I would say, hey, my family, we're probably more hobbyists in the tournament target archery thing. But I will tell you, peer pressure is a son of a gun. And even with my daughters, man, when they would show up and it's like their classmates are getting a pin and they're not, I was always my go-to was, how much did you shoot at home this week?
Yeah.
I didn't. Well, there you go, kid. That's why so-and-so is getting a pin, and you got to sit in the bed of the truck on the way. No, I'm kidding.
It's tougher when we do have those scoring days and we do what we call a pin ceremony, where if you achieve a certain score, you get a certain pin for that achievement. So,
right.
And when some kids see that other kids are getting them, they kind of like, well, hey, I want that, you know, or if you're, you know, you shoot with a buddy that you go to class with and he gets it and you don't, it makes you want to work for that.
It's not a bad thing, man. The target doesn't lie. That's what I tell my kids. It's like, hey, you can tell me you're trying really hard.
Yeah.
But But if you're not shooting X's,
yeah, you know? Again, it's just practicing. But it's one of those things that if you're very competitive, that's something you want. You know, it's really sweet to have a lanyard full of pins on there, and
oh yeah,
you know, it shows your accomplishments, and then
you can go as far with it as you want. And I would make the argument too. You can make it as expensive as you want, or you could make it as affordable as you want. What's that, like bare bow basically would be?
Yeah, bare bow is like your basic.
No sights, no nothing.
And yeah. There's a lot of still competitive people that shoot bare bow. If you've never seen a archery tournament, I think bare bow division is one of the coolest, funnest divisions to watch, because scores can be separated by one arrow. You know, one guy can be dominating the whole time, and next thing you know, he shoots one bad shot, and then the other person capitalizes on that shot, and you can flip the score real fast. But it's amazing to see how accurate people can be without having sights. There's still hunters out there that go out bow hunting without sights on a bow. It's like the old school Robin Hood way. I credit to them on going out there and putting that in, because you're not going to be able to shoot as far as you would with a compound bow with sights. So you got to get in closer. So that just shows you how good your stalking skills are, you know, getting into an animal at 20 yards, you know, if 15, you know, with a bare bow. So very cool to see people who still do bare bow shooting.
My brother, in fact, is a doesn't understand why they even make bows with wheels. He got me going on the recurve thing, and I made the argument this season, as everybody that listens to the show knows, I made the argument, I think the recurve thing, or bare bow in target terms, I think I would have actually filled my tag, because I had a couple opportunities inside of 25 yards where the deer spun so fast, I was still settling my pin. I was still, like, there was so much going on. I got it done 2 years ago now with a recurve, and I think if I had put the work into recurve this year, I might have come home with a deer instead of a delightfully seasoned tag. But anyway, without going down a rabbit hole there, you don't have to go out and buy the 8, 9, 10 different accoutrements for a target bow. You can just keep it simple. I wanted to ask you, what age do you prefer to see kids starting at?
So in our program, kids can start as early as 8 years old, and then usually...
Is that a maturity thing or a... physical thing?
Yeah, it's
or?
Just more of a maturity thing.
Okay.
I've taught kids in the past at, you know, 6, 5.
And right.
It's, you know, to them, it's kind of toys. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's still, you got to still see it as, you know, we are shooting at a men's range. These are not toys. They can still hurt someone.
Oh, 100%.
And really, at that age, it's more capable of them pulling back on a bow. Having a bow that actually they can be able to pull back and control, versus, you know, a little kid that they're struggling to pull back the weight. You know, they just don't have the stability or dexterity, you know, to fling an arrow. So there's going to be a lot of assistance with, you know, having a coach there. Or
when you start getting to that intermediate level, what's the kind of timeline there? What age are most kids jumping to intermediate?
I have kids that, again, really develop fast in the beginner side. So usually I see a lot of kids who really get into the intermediate class around, like, you know, 9, 10 years old. You know, mostly like kids in 10, 11, 13 year old ranges are going to probably jump up faster into the intermediate side than, you know, an 8 year old, 9 year old from the beginner class. So they'll take them a little longer, but it's not an impossible feat. You know, we're teaching them at 10 yards. You know, when you're an intermediate student, it gets more difficult because now we doubled the range to 20. So it's like going back to beginners again at 20 yards. So it's a little more frustrating because the target got smaller. It's further back there. So
I got a bone to pick with USA Archery. It was frustrating for my oldest daughter because she shot pretty good right out of the gate and jumped to intermediate quickly. They should keep them at 9 meters or 10 yards and just make it a slightly smaller circle.
Right.
Because she went to 20 and it's the same size target, but now it's out there at 20. And man, she went, it wasn't a plateau, EJ. It was like a dive into a canyon score wise.
Yeah.
And that mentally for her was like, what am I doing wrong? This is rough.
Again, it's tough when you have to start reaching out a little longer, because further out the target goes, your mistakes are amplified double.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're missing at 10 yards by 4 inches, you're going to miss at 8 to 10 at 20.
Yeah. So you're off the target it shows now. You, yeah.
It shows you your consistency and you know your how your form and shooting it has to be more dialed in.
USA Archery, keep them at 10 and just make it a little smaller. But that could just be, I think, that parental thing of not wanting to see your kids suffer. And you're like, oh, man, I feel so bad for you right now. This is tough. Talking about setups, you're a PSE guy.
I've been shooting PSEs since I've been shooting a bow. I've shot other bows working at a pro shop, and there's a lot of good bows out there. I can't really knock on any bows out there. It becomes more of a preference and feel now. This day and age, technology has caught up with all manufacturers, so any manufacturer makes a pretty decent bow. It's just kind of how does that bow feel for you? For me, I've always liked the way a grip always felt on PSEs. They feel always consistent every year. Any style bow I've shot with them, I feel like my hand placement always felt the same, and I just, you know, liked it. I can't say that, you know, every bow I've ever shot was always best feeling. You know, there's right. just different things that people look at for their bows. I shot a PSE Citation the last 3-4 years and when they released it, and I loved it. I won my state championships with that bow. And this last year, I got the PSE Dominator, which they, you know,
the new version,
new Dominator Duo they re-released, and I absolutely love that bow now.
Hey, we have not touched on hunting stuff yet. Don't go anywhere, you guys. Hey, grab another coffee. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. When we come back, let's talk a little bit outdoors hunting coming up on Nevada Backcountry. We are back. Final segment here. Man, we've gone down the rabbit hole on target stuff. I don't want to completely get away from that, but let's take a second and talk hunting. EJ, you drew a tag this year.
I did. I drew a mule deer antler this year.
How'd it go?
Not great.
okay.
I thought it would be a lot better, but no, it was a great experience. First time hunting the Ruby Mountains.
Range.
Awesome mountain range, man. I think it's probably one of the most physical things I've ever done in my life, hunting up in those mountains. Buddy and I were up there 6 days. We backpacked and slipped on top of the mountain. First time I had to drink wild water and do all that stuff, you know, just eating MREs for 5 days. So there was no base camp like you would before, you know, go back to the truck, have all the ice, you know, everything was
the fireplace and the canvas wall tent.
Everything was great, you know, at base camp. But no, this is the first time it's sleeping on top of the mountain and, you know, just kind of living what the land gives you out there. Up there, man, it was just vast country. And I end up only seeing maybe 2 bucks the entire time when we were up there.
Okay.
And we spent a good 20 miles from peak to peak to summit to summit. It was just like, where are the deer, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I, at the end of the day, you know, things like that, you can't trade those experiences.
Would you do it again?
I would.
Okay.
You know, how much I would say no, I would, if I physically can, I would still do it. That's just, you know, hunting's always fun, no matter if you are successful or not. There's the camaraderie you get with a hunting partner out there, or if you're a solo out there, it's just, being out there and, you know, sometimes I just take a step back and just look where I'm at, not being in the city, and I really appreciate being out in nature.
Yeah, that wilderness out there is vast. Like you said, vast. As far as Nevada goes, man, I don't know if there's another range that holds a candle as far as the physicality of the Rubies.
Yeah.
Cool place for sure.
Probably some of the biggest mountains I had to physically climb with a pack on. And
I'm
talking, my pack was probably like a good 80 pounds. And trying to haul that up that steep mountain, you know, and bushwhacking through some of the alpines up there. And there was like literally, I lost my release on day two. That dropped out of my harness on my binos.
Were you using like a thumb button?
Yeah, I had a thumb button, and it came out, and in the alpines, we were bushwhacking, and it fell out, and thank God I had my Onyx on tracking
Oh, you didn't have a spare?
No. Oh, I had a spare, but it's a wrist strap. I haven't.
Oh, okay.
You know, I haven't shot that spare wrist strap release in years.
Gotcha.
So my confidence level at that point was like making shots was really touch and go at okay. that point.
Okay.
And I think by the end of day three or four, I think it was beginning of day four, we woke up, we scouted for a while, and come like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we figured, you know, things are probably bedded down now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go backtrack a little bit. You know, let's see if we'll go backtrack a few miles and see maybe we'll run into it. And
yeah.
I followed my trail, and lo and behold, it was right there just on the trail. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's a release I had for many years. You know, I was pretty sentimental to it, so I just did not want to lose that. But
I've left them on the mountain before.
Yeah.
I think I told you, yeah, there's one. Anybody listening, hey, there is a Scott Echo on the top of Spruce Mountain out in Unit 105. I didn't want to go back up for it. I wasn't going to do it. So,
yeah, I almost had that that notion that, you know what? It's going to leave it up here. You know, it's going to die up here. So
well, I always tell people, if you're getting into bow hunting, look at the price of one release and then double it. The only release I've bought as a single has been for target archery is a hinge. Because I'm like, well, I'm not going to lose this thing inside a indoor range or whatever.
Right.
But when it comes to hunting releases, I always buy them in duplicate.
Yeah.
There's no way. I just don't.
Bring a backup.
Yeah.
That's what I can
say. And bring the same... Yeah, same one.
Same style, because if you lose one out there, there's your hunt.
Good for you for getting it. Man, rubies can be tough. I will tell you, I love, and my poor wife, because I come home feral after these trips, but I like that. What did you say? Something about living off of what the land gives you?
Yeah.
I like that, and I like hanging it out there, that bear trip into the Selkirks. And the Selkirks, for people who haven't spent time in that country, take the rubies and turn it up to 11. The southern end of the Canadian Rockies, this last trip, I had my first standoff with a grizzly bear. Man, I like hanging it out there like that.
Yeah, and you know, we ran out of water, and I was like, what are we going to do now? You know, it's like, oh, we got to go find water.
Yep.
You know, going, finding a water source and just... You know,
filtering your water.
Filtering your water, and you're just like, I'm going to drink this stuff? I'm like, yeah. And
oh, yeah.
It's a whole different experience. You know, again, it ain't base camp. You don't have bottled water in the cooler waiting for you. It's like filtered up, and then once you load up, take it back to camp.
Yeah.
Up the mountain, you know. Yeah. So, it's a great experience living off the land like that.
Dream hunt. Let's go state of Nevada. You could draw any tag, any unit. What do you want?
You know, I would love to go back to the rubies, but I'm waiting for my elk tag. I've never been elk hunting yet, so.
Okay.
Never successful. I'm just building points right now.
Priorities for units or?
You know, I just kind of seeing the rubies, it's so vast. Like I think the north part of the rubies, I was more in the southern part. So
okay.
Just seeing the north and just seeing the thickness of the forest out there, you know, Again, I just want to elk hunt.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter, you know, because I know we're going to go a little deeper into that in the woods for a hunt versus like being on top of the mountain.
Okay, so elk in Nevada. Hey, I'm with you. I've done the Montana thing. I've done the Utah thing. But I'm like you. I want a bull tag in
Nevada.
A
bull tag, you know.
Yeah.
Here, especially in Nevada with a bow.
Yes.
That would be.
Okay.
You know, once that's probably checked off the list, definitely love to hunt in like Alaska. Pretty awesome.
Caribou and moose are the last two DIY hunts up there. I think both of those are getting so logistically spendy. And the people flying bush planes in, they know how rare their services are.
Yeah.
So you're going to pay $5,000-$6,000 just for them to fly you in.
Yeah.
The Alaska thing with a bow, I think would be really cool. I guess I got to start buying lottery tickets. I've heard you got to actually buy one to win.
We'll just do a GoFundMe account for that, you know.
People beg for all kinds of weird stuff. We might as well send Henry and EJ to Alaska. We'll get that set up and let you guys know where the address is. Now, talk about the outdoor target, not 3D stuff. Because that's still, I've done the 3D shoots.
Sure.
So I get how that kind of works. I've done the indoor 20-yard deal. There's like a 900 round or something. There's like longer distance outdoor shoots.
Yeah, there's styles of outdoor targets where you're necessarily not shooting at 3D animals, which is like, you know, like a molded animal out there. There's actually paper target, We did a 900 round up in Eureka for the NBHA state all-around shoot.
Okay.
Which you're going to shoot like, you know, different distances, kind of a almost like you start at like 60 yards, 50 to 40 yards. So you're going to shoot, I think, like six rounds of six arrows.
Okay.
At 60, then it comes in at 50, then same thing. And again, you're trying to hit a big circular target.
What's the bullseye on those? At like 60 yards, what do you have to hit to get a 10 or whatever it is?
I don't have the diameter. Like I would know. Okay. I think it's a... I would say the 10 ring is...
10 ring is X-ring. Like a coffee cup. Okay.
Then, you know, there's an outer ring on that, so a little bit wider, but it's...
Baseball-ish?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could just probably, you know, at 60 yards, that target is just as small as a... It almost looks like the target that you would shoot at 20 yards.
Okay.
It's tiny. Again, mistakes are amplified way more shooting that distance.
And oh, yeah.
Being consistent. And when you shoot outdoors, you do shoot with the elements. So, you know, wind, terrain, sun. You know, sun can change with clouds and stuff like that. Your lighting, so your sights look... be a little different looking at your target there. So you're going to have to make some small micro adjustments sometimes. So it's a different kind of beast when you shoot outdoors.
Shooting glass lenses outside. Because everybody talks about glare and this, that, and the other thing. And again, a little bit of that ego coming from the bow hunting world of like, yeah, dude, I don't know anything else but shooting outside. What are you guys all complaining about?
Right, right, right.
Well, glare on a, for those that don't know, when you're shooting these target sights or scopes, there's a glass lens in there. If the sun hits that glass lens just right.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have a nice little glare. And
you can't see what you're shooting. Yeah.
You're just kind of like, I hope I'm in the center.
Exactly. Hey, as we record this, it is October 17th. I'll see you in a few hours here for League Tonight.
Definitely, tonight. We're starting League Tonight. So if you guys are interested in shooting any leagues, we are starting a Las Vegas 3-spot league tonight. We shoot Tuesdays and Thursdays starting at 7 p.m.
Perfect. Hey, EJ, cannot thank you enough, man. Sincerely.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time.